What's on your mind, Cairns? Call 1-300-872-911 now to talk to Macca. Thanks to Pacific Toyota. Better service, better range, better by far North Queensland. On 846-4CA.
Interesting tale, given the discussion yesterday with Linda Tuck on this program about the unavailability of accommodation, fundamentally. I mean, this figure, 0.6 of 1%. Remember we used to talk about 2% as being tight accommodation situation. Now, it's 0.6 of 1% for those seeking rental properties. However, this is an interesting release. This is for people desperate for a roof over their heads. Affordable housing. This is the Cairns Council earmarking 934 of its properties for potential sale, lease or donation as a means of stimulating development of low-income housing. Now, the option was presented as part of the Council's action plan on affordable housing and homelessness, but the review of the freehold parcels isn't due for completion until 2026, 3 years from now. Division 3 Councillor Cathy Zyga said councillors had not yet been told which properties had been tagged for review. Now, in the article further on, it reads several councillors lauded the report as it was presented at last week's ordinary meeting, particularly for its comprehensive understanding of local problems and identification of stakeholders. Councillor Zyga felt the report spoke more to the power of the council as an advocacy body. This has been something that's coming up from time to time, what we need to see from our council. More advocacy, if you like, advocating on the things that really matter most. So she's spoken out once again on this matter. She felt the report spoke more to the power of the council as an advocacy body rather than the solutions it can action in isolation. Councillor Zyga said the state government had undersupplied public housing for so many years. And she's on the line here. There she is, Councillor Cathy Zyga of Division 3, Cairns Council. G'day, Cath.
Good morning, John.
Oh, you've spoken out again. This is an interesting point you've made here. 934 of these properties for potential sale. Sounds like a heck of a whack, but 3 years to sort out which ones could go. It's seemingly a long time to wait.
It is, when you think, you know, the problem is now. And I think it's a review of all of council's properties. And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that would include your sporting places, your sporting clubs, because we own all of, you know, the majority of those and we lease them out to clubs. So, of course, we're not about to revoke any leases and suddenly build houses. But I think it's, you know, we needed to look at everything that we've got now anyway. And council really doesn't have very many houses. You know, anything we had, we gave it, I think, to Access Housing or one of the other service providers. But I think, you know, as I say there, to advocate, the report is good in it. You know, it covers, you know, I was looking through it initially, like, where's the solution? Where's the solution? But there's no simple solution. Yes, we can, as I spoke to you Monday about rates, we could perhaps not charge people with non-PPR, non-principal place of residence. Yes. Don't charge them extra.
Yes.
Let's encourage people to invest in properties. Yeah. I think, you know, we need to have some tax incentives from the federal government to, you know, let's encourage people to have investment properties. The report also talks about, you know, what constitutes homelessness, what are the side effects of homelessness, and what is the cost to the society, our community, for this, and the health and mental health and all the rest of it that surrounds that. So it's quite a valuable report for advocacy, because when we are kind of saying, look, hey, guys, you really need to be building some more houses, we've researched this to the nth degree.
Yeah.
So no one can, you know, they can't say, oh, this is just hearsay. We have it studied and done. We've talked to, you know, all the service providers. We've connected those. And that's a huge job, John. Yeah. There's so many. And wonderful providers such as, say, Mission Australia. They do a street-to-home project that they monitor them, they support them. And because I've never really been a fan of let's just give people free houses and let them go.
Yes.
You can talk to many people and I hear lots of, you know, cries of this is not fair. Why are people living in our street threatening us and behaving terribly?
Yes, exactly.
you know, it's not a matter of let's just give out some freebies, because it empowers that welfare mentality, that handout. It's a privilege to have a home. And yes, let's provide it. And if these people have high needs, let's surround them with support. So they'll say, this is how you live in your home. And, you know, look, if you're not going to respect your neighbours, go. And, you know, often the response I get from state governors, well, where are we going to put them? And I feel like saying, well, you know, you're creating problems. Let's figure out some answers to that. But, you know, yeah, it's quite a detailed issue.
Now, it's interesting, yesterday Linda Tuck was on the program. She's virtually on the coalface out there when it comes to accommodation. This 0.6%, she used to be on the program saying, my God, we're down to 2% vacancy rate. Well, we're down to 0.6%. Now, and she detailed just how difficult it is for people that have never faced homelessness before to find a roof over their head. And some of these are mums with young kids. And she detailed just the difficulties they're having, the concerns they have, the nightmare in some cases that they are facing trying to get a roof over their heads. And once again, this isn't going to be anything like an easy one to address at all, is it?
No, because we've got a problem now. I've got a beautiful couple that used to help me in the breakfast program at White Rock School.
Yeah.
Lovely couple. You know, they're just one of these really battlers. They've got kids. They're living in a tent.
Yes.
And they go around to different friends and they put their tent in their backyard. And I've gone, you know, I've tried to kind of go referee for them on quite a few rentals. But, you know, they're not that, you know, I don't know what the perfect person is. But I feel for them. Imagine that, trying to raise a family in a tent. But then you've got people, like I said, you know, some people have got it and they don't appreciate it. So I'm like, let's give the ones that appreciate it a home. But we have such a problem, John. You know, we really need to be encouraging, you know, investors to buy and build and rent it out and reward them for doing that. Yeah. I think that would be a huge start. And we're all screaming at government to answer all our problems. That's not all. You know, they can't suddenly build all these homes. And then what happens if they have a knee-jerk, build a whole heap of them in somewhere that's not appropriate and don't manage it properly, then we've got another problem altogether. So we need to get together and do it well, which is what this report aims to encourage.
What might come from it? I mean, you read this and at the end of it, you haven't really got a picture in your head of what's going to happen in 3 years from now if everything goes tickety-boo. If you could paint a picture in words for us of what might emerge from this, do you have a clear picture?
Well, look, I think what might emerge from this, we might be able to identify some land in suitable zoning areas that could be used for that. Now, there's also incentives we give developers at the moment, and this applies to, you know, a person with a home that might be on 800 square metres, they decide, oh, look, it's suitable to be cut into two.
Yeah.
And we give them a half price cost. So if it was going to cost $60,000 in, you know, infrastructure fees or whatever fees, they only have to pay $30,000. We've got lots of incentives like that out at the moment. We can identify areas that are perhaps zoned incorrectly and zone them correctly for some higher density living. But, of course, it has to be done so well, John. So I don't think in 3 years we're going to have some perfect magical answer, but we'll have a better picture of what we've got, how we can use it better, and how we can help and, you know, work with the three tiers of government.
Now, Cathy, this would have been sent maybe as a throwaway sentence in this coverage by Isaac McCarthy, but there was a bit of discussion, I think it was Friday if I remember rightly, and Gavin King was hot on this particular matter, and he wants every level of representation, meaning if you're elected to represent the people of North Queensland or the people of Cairns or whatever, you speak out in advocacy, which he points out would include our councillors. And he points out that really there's lots of things that we need advocacy on, like, for example, the appalling behaviour we're seeing in our CBD. I mean, I don't think he was suggesting intervention from our council, but certainly getting out there and saying these are issues that we've got to find answers for. And you're saying something similar here. Councillor Zyga felt the report spoke more to the power of the council as an advocacy body rather than solutions of connection in isolation. What are your thoughts on what Gavin was saying last week? We need our elected representatives at whatever level. If we've got an emergency, speak out on our behalf and give us some relief. And my God, we need relief in our CBD.
100%, John. We're elected to represent the people. And yes, our powers of doing things are different depending on what level of government. But, you know, how many times do we, like, look at the money that the council, and this is ratepayer money. So you've got your taxpayer paying their taxes, and the state government, you know, putting in more police in, which is great, but there's no, there's no consequence for action.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's just simple. Like, you know, if I was a kid and I wrecked, you know, the neighbour's fence, you know, I would be expected to go and work for that neighbour and fix the fence. And it's simple, simple things. When you take away accountability for action, these are the severe consequences. I mean, it's just a whole new level. I worry about, you know, my grandkids, what's going to happen then? Unless we have some severe change to legislation.
Yeah.
And, of course, we need to be advocating that, and as I'm doing right now on your radio station. Listen, we need change. But surely, you know, the lawmakers can see the change that needs to be done, or maybe they can't. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, we need something to happen. These reports coming through to me are just terrifying. I mean, once again yesterday, this lady at her tour desk in the CBD, in comes the kid. Apparently, it may be even the same 9-year-old we're hearing so much about this time. Once again, steals the scissors straight into the shorts or underpants or whatever, and that kid's roaming around the CBD all afternoon, armed, and potentially going to attack someone. This morning, a lady contacts me about an absolute nightmare down, I think it was in McLeod Street, just near Cairns Central. This was late at night, like 10 or 11 o'clock. Once again, these are gangs of 9, 10, 11-year-olds. Once again, of the youngest, seemingly the youngest of them, wielding what appeared to be a knife, or once again scissors, slipped into the underpants, etc., brought out when things became confrontational. They smashed into a bottle shop. I mean, it goes on and on every night in our town, but these are children. Because of that, people say, oh, well, what can we do? What sort of intervention's possible? We've got to find a way. These are fundamentally criminals first, children second.
Well, it's so challenging. And you know what's happened to these kids to get them to that point. So there's that side of it too. But that's not helping anybody. And we're talking about different things. I'd love to see, you know, we've got so many farmers and people out in the land that would love some help to do all their fencing, and the kids have a good, you know, an activity. They see a result at the end of the day. But of course, they're going to have to be monitored. But I'd prefer to pay my taxes to pay somebody who is trained to work with these kids out in the middle of the sticks, where
exactly.
They're not going to get affected
exactly.
by, you know, their peers, and they can start to get a bit of an appreciation for life. Life is amazing if you can see it. But if they can't see it and they're in the middle of it all, doesn't that say, what can we do here to assist, you know, to change that path? And sadly, a lot of them are... You know, can you not change everyone's path, and what's going to happen with them? But we need to be having these discussions, not just, oh, look, we'll just put a few extra years on that jail term, that'll fix it. Or we'll just, you know, hear of all these, what's some kid got out, on bail when they shouldn't be getting out on bail, all these things.
Mm.
It's so detailed and deep, John, but it worries me that what happens, all this work we put into the city to attract our tourists, but you're fearful, you know, they changed the legislation that it's now okay to defecate and urinate and beg in public. Because we wouldn't want to encroach on their, their rights. So I just think, look, we just need some common sense brought back in.
Thank you, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Here's another example, the gobbledygook. When we're talking about the so-called juvenile justice system, what a misnomer that is. But here's another example in the Cairns Post today with this business with the cranes. And it reads here, one youth has been dealt with under the Youth Justice Act. What does that gobbledygook actually mean? To me, it means no consequence, potentially.
Well, that's it, and that's what we're all thinking. And it's all these things of confidentiality in this. And yes, we'd love to see those kids, you know, go back and help repair that crane, for goodness sake. What do you know? Obviously, you can't, but he can do some work and get some enjoyment and satisfaction out of doing it and pay it back and go, it was really stupid. I can't believe we did that. Do something to make amends. And I know it is deeper than that. I know it's deeper than that, a throwaway thing, but just there's those basic things. Like, who does that? What makes you want to do that? I don't understand.
Well, yeah. I've got to say, this discussion today, Cathy, has been encouraging. It really has, and enlightening. So more power to you on this particular front. There'll be people at home saying, oh, thank God. Thank God. Someone knows how we feel about this. Someone knows how threatened we feel.
Oh, we know how you feel. We all just could fix it, yeah.
Mm. Really appreciate this, Cathy. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
That's Division 3 Councillor Cathy Zeiger, Cairns Council.